is the Talking Tigers Podcast, presented by the Alabama Department of Public Health. Don't wait. Vaccinate. Protect yourself and others against COVID and flu. For more information, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM. Here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers Podcast.
He planned to walk on at Florida. As a matter of fact, Mark Chapman didn't even know that Auburn was in the state of Alabama. Auburn assistant coach Steve Renfro came to Orlando to recruit Chapman's catcher at Boone High School. That catcher, Joe Oliver, went to pro ball. But Chapman pitched that day and caught Renfro's eye. And by the time Chapman left Auburn, his name was prominent in the record books and still is today. This is part one of Mark Chapman and the Talking Tigers Podcast, brought to you by Alabama Public Health.
Welcome to the Talking Tigers Podcast. Very glad to talk with a former Auburn baseball player, spent time in the minor leagues. He is Mark Chapman, who joins us today. War Eagle.
War Eagle, Andy. Great to be here.
I have known the name Mark Chapman for a long time. You take a look at the record books in Auburn baseball history, and that name for pitchers is very prominently noted. As we record, he is 2 days away from being inducted into his high school Hall of Fame, Boone High School in Orlando. It's an eventful weekend because your son graduates on Friday, and then you're inducted into the Hall of Fame at your high school on Saturday. That's a big weekend.
Big weekend. I was talking to a good buddy of mine just in the car driving down from Atlanta this morning, and he told me, he said, "Hey, old man, pace yourself this weekend. There's a lot going on." But no, this is quite an honor to be here. I love listening to you on air and on your podcast and everywhere else. You do a fantastic job. Big weekend for the family. Proud of our son, our youngest of two, gets his master's. He walks tomorrow night. He thought about not walking, and he came to the realization of this is once in a lifetime to walk again as he did for his undergrad last year. But Boone High in Orlando, it'll be some glory days and an old homecoming of sorts in a couple of days.
Your son is following in his father's footsteps, isn't he?
He is. I did not have to have a fifth year back then, but he's an accounting major like me. I took a winding path to accounting. I tried computer science and engineering back in the early 80s when no one really knew what that was, including me. It didn't stick. I tried to make it work, got a little too busy with baseball. I thought I could pledge a fraternity as well, and that ended up not working out, but it was for the best. I needed to focus on two things, being a student, being a ball player, but that also involved a major change. I had an accounting professor, Gary Waters, Dr. Right. Waters. It's the reason ultimately I got accounting, and I've always said, and I told my son the same thing, if you get accounting, if you're a business major and you get accounting, that's your major, because you can do anything with it.
Right.
You're not pigeonholed. But yeah, proud of Davis for all the work he's done.
Where did accounting lead you?
Well, accounting was plan B for me. After Auburn, bounced around the minor leagues for 6 years, but I kind of always knew, I shouldn't say that. I knew I was good enough to get the big leagues. But I knew that I was not elite in terms of stuff, draft pick, investment by your team in terms of bonus and the like. And so I knew plan B was what it was going to need to look like. So in the off seasons of my minor league career, I worked for KPMG. And I still think to this day I'm the longest running intern in the history of KPMG because they didn't know what to call me. But I'd come back from a minor league season, and I'd work the busy season in public accounting, put on a suit and tie and carry workbooks around and binders and Macintosh computers and dot matrix printers and all the stuff we did back in the 80s and early 90s. My clients were sort of set up where then come spring training, I'd finish a client's engagement. We'd scheduled it so that it worked out that way. And I'd head off to Phoenix or West Palm for spring training. And so the two busy seasons, if you will, of public accounting and professional baseball meshed perfectly.
Okay. Well, you and I were talking before we turned the mics on. You grew up at a time when, well, Disney World wasn't even there until you were six.
Yeah. My dad was in an industry that afforded him some cool things to do. One of them was to get invited to the gala grand opening for Magic Kingdom. And so he and my mom were able to do that. And it was, a who's who of local, national, probably global people as well too. And great place to grow up as a kid. I mean, I probably would have loved raising our kids there. We ended up doing it in Atlanta, but Orlando wasn't busy to us. Disney was just part of the culture, but it was early enough where it wasn't quite the zoo it is now.
Right.
But it was, we loved, and some people lived down there and think it's a burden to have all that around you. We loved it. We went all the time.
How big is high school baseball at Boone High School?
Was huge, still huge.
Yeah.
My sophomore year in 10th grade, we won, 4A was the highest classification. We won the state championship. My 10th grade year, our head coach was a guy named John Hart. John ended up a minor league and a big league coach and manager, and then a general manager for the Cleveland Indians. So he's the John Schuerholtz of the Cleveland Indians. Right. He built the Indians of the 90s. That was my high school baseball coach. My two high school catchers have 20 years combined in the big leagues. Ron Karkovice backed up Carlton Fisk for the White Sox forever and played in his own right as well, wasn't just a backup. And Joe Oliver. Joe Oliver caught for the Reds for a decade and had a walk-off hit off Eckersley in the 1990 World Series and has been a friend since Little League.
What was high school baseball like for you then?
It happened late. I'm a poster child for late bloomers. It pains me to think about how different things are today, that late bloomers don't get a ton of a chance to bloom. If they bloom, there's going to be in some other sport. Specialization is put kids in buckets and boxes, you know, boys and girls, every sport, every activity, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, you name it. They have to be really good, really fast, and really young. That wasn't me. I was a physically a late bloomer. I had coaches that kept me on rosters. I played rec baseball till I was 15, but everybody did back then. You know, Little League became Senior League, but it was still a Little League affiliation. But as a junior in high school, partly because of the talent ahead of me, the two pitchers ahead of me as a junior, one was a first-round pick, one was a sixth-round pick. So I was getting crowded out. I ended up splitting time as a junior on the JV team. But part of that was John Hart sending me down to learn how to pitch, because I didn't start pitching until I was 16. I was a utility kind of jack of all trades a little bit. I was an okay hitter, but, you know, I hit like a pitcher, which is why I became one. But and part of it was, again, being the school that Boone was for baseball, you're behind some really good talent. So it wasn't until my senior year that I kind of had the number one spot to myself.
What was that senior year like for you then? And when did you start hearing from recruiters?
A little bit of pressure on all of us, because as sophomores, our team had won the state championship. As juniors, the varsity team had made it to the Final Four. Should have won it again, but we didn't. And Joe Oliver, as I mentioned, was probably the key returner from that team. We had a lot of seniors on the team my junior year. So a lot of us, JV or bench or role players on varsity as a junior, had to sort of take over back-to-back years like we had. We had a new coach also. John Hart had been lured away. The Baltimore Orioles hired him away to be a minor league manager, which led to ultimately his professional career. So first-year coach, a ton of new players, and we did well. We won our conference. We won our district. We lost a heartbreaker in the state playoffs, but we held our own after a couple of really solid years behind. And Boone is really... You know, here we are 40 years later, Boone's still a baseball school.
All metro, all county, all state.
Yep. It was, again, good. Central Florida's great baseball talent. I got on radar screens late. I was not heavily recruited, partly because, again, as a junior, I didn't play varsity. And even back then, you know, the big schools recruited juniors, sophomores and juniors. It's nowhere near as complicated as it is today. I had junior college offers. I got more letters from Georgia Tech than anybody. I thought that was the coolest thing, just seeing mail. First of all, mail in general, you know, nobody lives that life anymore. But when you see the letterhead of Georgia Tech Athletics or Stetson Athletics or whatever coming in, that's kind of cool. But no offers at all. I was going to go to Florida, and I was going to walk on. I was enrolled at Florida, and I was going to walk on, but I wasn't a preferred walk on. I was just, in my mind, that's what I was going to do. My parents were Gators. Steve Renfro came, Auburn assistant coach at the time, came to Orlando to watch Joe catch. And that was not unusual, because every school and every professional organization came to watch Joe catch. It was just the thing from the year prior with all of our other talent as well. I just happened to pitch. It was at Evans High School. It was on the road. I threw a one or two hit shutout, had a really good game. And it was in the middle of a good year, but just not on anybody's radar. And I didn't hear anything about it after that game. Coach calls me into his office back at Boone. A couple of days later, he said, remember that Auburn coach that was came to watch Joe the other day? I said, yeah. He goes, they're sending the pitching coach down. They want to come see you. Davis May was our pitching coach at the time, former Auburn pitcher as well, and late teammate of Joe Beckwith and Kirk Cope and those guys. Now I realize, oh, goodness. I'm the one being watched. Yeah. You know, I'm not the one who happened to be seen. I'm now the one being watched. Had another good game. I knew this much about Auburn.
Ever been to Auburn?
Never been to Auburn. I thought Auburn was in Georgia. I didn't know Auburn was in Alabama until my recruiting trip. I literally was in the airport in Atlanta, and I looked at, back then, commuter planes were still flying out of Atlanta, long before the extended runway at Auburn now. So I took a little commuter prop plane to Auburn, and on the screen, I was connecting to Auburn AL. And I'm like, AL? I guess Auburn's in Alabama. Coach Nix turned out to be, I was part of his last recruiting class. Auburn had been, I think, 10th out of 10 for a couple years running. Pat Dye, AD, as well as our head football coach, had more or less said, hey, let's rebuild. You know, if we're going to struggle, let's struggle with 18 and 19-year-olds. And, you know, and so I got swept up in a big rebuilding recruiting class. And called my dad on that trip. I watched Bo Jackson take BP as a freshman. Called my dad on that trip, and I said, they just offered me a scholarship to come pitch. What do I do? My dad, who's a Gator, he goes, War Eagle. And that was it. It was April of my senior year. Okay. I had to unenroll at Florida. Roomed with Charlie Smith, still a dear friend. We were part of that same class. We were the two Florida boys. He was Fort Walton High, and I was Boone High in Florida. We met at the All-State series as seniors in high school. The coaches made sure we met. We were roomed together as freshmen, and we were part of a really solid freshman and junior college incoming class that helped kind of turn things around.
War Eagle, it's a great day for Auburn Tigers to get vaccinated. Many children and adults that delayed vaccinations during the pandemic are still behind schedule. It's crucial that we take steps to get everyone back on track with their routine immunizations. Children and teens can still catch up on their vaccinations even if they start late. Make sure you and your family are all up to date on all recommended vaccines, including COVID-19 and flu. Let's all do our part to get back on track. Don't wait. Vaccinate. For more information, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM.
Describe Mark Chapman as a pitcher.
Mark Chapman was not a pitcher until he met Hal Baird. I was a thrower up to that point. I didn't have dominant stuff. I had a good high school fastball. I could throw a four-seam and a two-seam and could locate. Probably had an above-average slider for high school, but I was a two-pitch pitcher. And in high school, you didn't need much more than that, even at a school like Boone and playing the talent we were playing. Got to Auburn, tried to figure out a changeup, and just couldn't quite find that third pitch. But I pitched. I got on the mound a lot again, part of this group coming in. I think I had, I don't remember exactly, double-digit starts. And
15 games, you're listed as a starter and reliever. 3-2 as a freshman.
Yep, 3-2. Had a decent ERA and a good mix of weekend and did not pitch every weekend. My eyes became wide open taking trips to Alec Box and Duty Noble and seeing big-time college baseball for the first time. Early on, I think we were all sort of filling in some gaps and just kind of figuring stuff out that first year. Coach Baird arrived we all used to joke, too, after our freshman year, Coach Nix retired. Long, legendary career here. Right. And a couple of Omaha teams and good man. Our joke was when we all showed up on campus, he looked at his last recruiting class and he said, yeah, I think it's time to retire. We made that up, but and then Coach Baird came in my sophomore year, like he did with a lot of pitchers, showed me a split finger grip, and I got it right away. I mean, it gave me not only a third pitch, it gave me a strikeout pitch to lefties, and that's when I became a pitcher.
You are part of a fabulous lineage. Yeah. Of those pitchers that Hal Baird taught the splitter, John Powell, who broke your strikeout record,
yep.
Perhaps most notably, and oh, by the way, Tim Hudson.
Yeah, not too bad, huh?
And there are more, but
many more.
But there are those are the two that I'm aware of,
yeah,
that went on to great success at Auburn and learned that splitter,
yeah,
from Hal Baird.
You know, on one of your previous podcasts that you did with him, and by the way, that those could go 6 hours and they'd still be too short, right?
Easy, yes.
It's awesome listening to him. He tells stories better than anybody. You asked him the best curveball, best fastball, best hitter, you asked him best splitter, and he named those two names, John and Tim. So I texted Coach Baird right after that. I said, I must be number three. But no, it was his first year. He showed everybody. I was one of the few who got it, and I got it on that first session. It was.
Why do you think you took to that so quickly?
I wish I had an answer.
Okay.
I don't know. I just, I think God gives you talent in spots, and sometimes sometimes you discover it. You certainly discover it at different times. For me, it was, I monkeyed around with my thumb. I put my thumb up on the side of the ball. It was like a two-seam fastball. I put my first two fingers, index and middle finger, on the outside of the two seams, but I put my thumb up further up on the side. Yeah. Part of that allowed me, that kept velocity down a little bit. But what it really did for me, it helped me put pressure on my index finger, because a split for a righty generally breaks away or falls away from a left-handed hitter. It's not a screwball because you don't turn it over,
right,
but it has a tight spin. A forkball kind of tumbles. A split finger breaks. Literally, I remember it. He was simulated pitching. I'm behind the L screen. He's sitting on a chair behind me. We're both sort of protected. We're telling the batters what's coming. And in four or five pitches, it was like, oh, man. And that gave me a third pitch. That was a fork in my road of becoming someone who could now set every batter up and not just. That was probably fall ball, now that I think about it, because he was not bashful. If somebody needed some help, he was right on top of trying to help kids out. And so, yeah, I think by spring and preseason, it was a developed third pitch of mine.
You go 5-5 as a sophomore. You play in 16 games. You start 14. So you're a starter by the time you're a sophomore.
I was number two behind Tim McClain, who was a senior at the time. That was Coach Baird's first year. That's the year we were starting to realize we got something really fun's going on here. Bo had come back. He ran track my freshman year. So he did not play baseball his sophomore year, my freshman year. So my sophomore year, his junior year, was that 85 season, his first full-time baseball season since his freshman year. He and Coach Baird got along great. I don't know how much that had to do with him coming back to play, but however it happened, we're thrilled it did. He had an incredible year. My roommate, Paul Foster, hits .433 that year. Third team All-American. I didn't look it up. A couple years ago, it's still the single season record. I think Gabe Gross got really close.
He and Todd Faulkner in the same year both hit .400.
Yes. Yeah. Paul had .433 in 85.
Yeah.
And the SEC was as good as still as today, as good as anywhere. I mean, there's the Thunder and Lightning team at Mississippi State. They, when you do a 30 for 30 on, 30 something years later on a team from 1985, that means they're a pretty darn good team. But we held our own. We swept that team. That was Greg's recruiting trip, if you remember that story.
That is the famed recruiting trip for Greg Olson, the sweep against Mississippi State.
Yeah. We knew he was in town. We knew one of the best, not just a recruit, but a capital R recruit, best pitcher in the country coming out of high school. We had some fun, we still do, dear friends of ours to this day. And we still have fun with him a little bit, but we took him, me and some of our buddies, we were part of his recruiting visit officially, but we knew he was in the stands. I don't recall if we knew it was down to us in Mississippi State. His signing was the next sort of milestone for Coach Baird as the program began to rebuild.
Coach Baird always ran the Auburn baseball program like a professional franchise. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way it always was with him.
Yep.
Did you see that? I mean, is that something that you picked up on as a player in those early days?
Right out of the gate, we did. Coach Nix was a different era. He was a old school bullhorn. There was no doubt sort of sometimes where you stood with Coach Nix right away. If we didn't come across the parking lot right, we got turned around and went back into the Coliseum and had to march back and turn around and come back. And Coach Baird he's more like, some people had dads that got mad. Some people had dads who got disappointed. Hal was one of those where I'd rather make him mad than make him disappointed, right? His cool style, his his walk to the mound. He didn't come out and air you out. I mean, if he needed the ball from you, he'd just do what they do, stick his hand out, and, you know, he'd coach you up. He always coached you up and always knew there was something, some other way, some tweak, some pitch, some something that could make you better. Mm-hmm. And he was always looking for that. As you said, every staff that would come in, he would come in and try to make every kid better. And it's not a formula. You got to, you know, tinker with it.
7-6 as a junior, 18 starts. By the time you're a junior, you are a starter. That includes a 15 strikeout game against Clemson.
Yeah.
Regular season game.
Yep.
Here?
Here. It was mid. I can't remember if we'd started SEC play yet or not. It was a 4-game series, if I remember right, in March. So I guess it technically could have been before things started, but that sounds a little late. I think back then, it probably was the way the schedule worked with only 10 teams.
Right.
Everyone kind of had a break or something. So, you know, so who does Coach Baird bring in? He brings in one of the best teams in the country, Clemson, which we, by the way, we love doing it. We did that with Virginia and a few other schools that were of that kind of caliber. I had good games. That was one of the two or three that everything just worked from pitch one to the ninth inning. It was a 9-inning game. They were loaded with lefties. I do remember that. A couple of future big leaguers on that team, one a first-round pick and a friend of mine. But like 7 lefties, and my split was working great. It's one of those days where you just, you know, I've heard you ask this of a few people too. There's days in the bullpen you just know.
Okay, you beat me to my next question. Yeah.
That was one of those days, yeah. and it worked, and yeah, and every now and then my phone will blow up. I think it last happened with Tanner Burns, where someone's getting close. It's been tied a few times, times, but my phone would buzz a few times. They're like, "Are you listening?" I'm like, "No, what?" They go, Tanner's got 12. Or the year before, Casey did it too, right? Back-to-back years. So.
Sure.
But listen, that's fun to still think that long ago and still be something that's still sitting in the books.
You knew that day coming out of the pen. Were there days, though, you came out of the pen and you're like, man, I have no idea what's going to happen?
Yeah, there are days you come out and you're thinking, I hope we score 10 runs.
And yet, there are those, I've heard,
yeah.
I've never experienced this, those days you come out of the pen and we're like, I have no idea what's going to happen, and
you find it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's another thing that a good pitching coach will help you do is, it's like warming up on the range at golf. Sometimes the last thing you want to do is stripe every drive on the range before you play right down the middle.
Yeah.
On the other end, you know, but then you get out there and things can be different. For me, bullpens were, some days you just felt it. The year before Mississippi State, with that weekend, Greg, the weekend. Ron Polk still talks about that weekend, you know, again, this much later. We walked off Jeff Brantley and Bobby Thigpen in game one.
Pretty good.
We were down 2-0. We scored 3 in the bottom. This is 2 7-inning games on Saturday. We walk off and win 3-2. Load the bases on Brantley. They bring in Thigpen. Single, game over. And I'm warming up for game two. And that's another one of those games but you're amped. It was here and the crowd was electric and they're the number one team in the country. We were 1-1 after 7. I had a 2-hitter, both Will Clark, missiles right by my ear hole. We go extra innings. I didn't have a ton of pitches. I threw the 8th, held him in the 8th, and Bo hits a 2-run walk-off in the bottom of the 8th.
What a day.
It was, I'm chill. Goosebumps. That ball's still in a case back in Atlanta. But that was another one of those games where you feel different warming up. And to your point, it doesn't always translate, but it did those couple games for sure.
Were you an emotional pitcher?
No. No, I was. Few times I'd let it fly. Usually it was in kind of to try to fire the team up, or maybe fire myself up in the dugout. But on the field, no, I was not. I held it together pretty good.
Did you use your splitter against left-handed hitters like some will use a changeup against a left-handed hitter?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, to the point where some of them, after Auburn in the minor leagues, several coaches would have to tell me, throw it to righties. I'd get in because it was such a unique pitch to any hitter, but to my mind it was still my strikeout pitch to a lefty, and I would sometimes leave it out of the repertoire against a right-handed hitter. But it was when it's working, just like any pitch, if you locate any pitch, it doesn't matter if it's lefty or righty up there. Yeah. You know, it does. But I still had to get reminded sometimes to say no, it's not just a left-handed batter pitch for you.
Senior year. 21 games, 21 starts, 11-4, 128 strikeouts, threw 105 and two-thirds innings, and make the NCAA tournament.
Funny, in that year, almost didn't happen for me. After my junior year, I was draft eligible, wasn't drafted. Coach Baird had a relationship with the Old Dominion, speaking of non-conference midweek teams we played. ODU came to town as a junior. Their pitching coach, Pat Rossler, was the head coach for the Kenai Peninsula Oilers in Alaska in the summer. So Continental U.S. coaches would coach summer ball.
Great summer league.
If you got invited to the Cape Cod or Alaska, the answer was yes, period, right? If you're kind of serious about wanting to keep playing. I was not drafted as a junior out of Auburn, went to that Alaska that summer of 86 before my senior year, and had a very, very good summer against college all-stars,
right,
the best of the best. I got home, was visiting my girlfriend at the time, my wife now. Hmm. Her mom walks in and says, and it's the sweetest Southern lady you've ever met, and she says, "Mark, the Milwaukee Brewers are on the phone." And they offered me $14,000 as signed as free agent. They wanted me in Beloit, Wisconsin the following Monday to go start professional career and skip my senior year. I listened and said, and Dan Duquette was who it was, the farm director, became the general manager of the Red Sox later on, right? A long time baseball guy. And he was at the time farm director for the Brewers. And he said, anyway, he laid it out for me. I said, "I need to make a couple calls. Can I call you back?" He said, "Of course." I called Coach Baird and called my dad. And both gave me basically the same answer. "We trust you to do what's right. There's no wrong answer here," right? Pros and cons. We kind of went through that list. I think my mind was made up almost right away. I'm like, I can't not come back to Auburn. We had some good talent leave, obviously, but you know, we had some really good talent already there. I had no idea Frank Thomas was going to be on the team. So I'd like to say that factored into it, but it didn't, because I didn't know who Frank was yet. So I said no to $14,000, all the money in the world. I'll never forget Mr. Duquette's reaction. It was the pressure they put on kids to sign. Anyway, long story short, came back to Auburn, and it paid off. Had a good year. I had personally had a good year. Finished off a little couple losses late, and then got a win in the regional to keep us alive. And yeah, got Auburn back to a regional for the first time in a decade.
Mm. In Huntsville.
Huntsville, yep, back when 8 regions, so no super regionals back then,
right.
8 regions, 6 teams went to a regional. The winner of each region went right to Omaha. We went 2-2. I lost to Seton Hall in game 1 and beat Seton Hall in game 3, came back on a day's rest, back when pitch counts were only it was a data point no one looked at. That was the era. If you're getting guys out, you stayed in.
Right.
Right. That second game, I was getting guys out. And a loaded lineup. Craig Biggio, former big league Hall of Famer, was on Seton Hall's team. Mo Vaughn, the nation's leading hitter, which wasn't either of the two of them, was on that team. And then a future shortstop for the Red Sox, John Valentin. And we had Frank Thomas, you know, and Greg Olson. So it was a...
That's a star-studded ball game.
That's not a bad regional to wrap things up, yeah, at all. And Arkansas won that regional, went to Omaha. We finished 3rd behind Arkansas. We lost to Clemson in the semifinals.
Stay tuned for part 2 next week for Mark Chapman and the Talking Tigers podcast, brought to you by Alabama Public Health. I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. Whoa, Rico.